like an up and coming area. I mean, a little bit in transition.
Pick Bill Brace's
mix. It is at the
same time. Afternoon, and welcome to this joint hearing of the Environment, Energy, and Natural Resources Budget Division, Subcommittee on Natural Resources, and E-12 Education Budget Committee. What we'd like to do today is really make this a informational session, talking about school trust lands from the educational side and certainly from the natural resources management side. Your executive summary, which you have in here, it states that the state of Minnesota owns 2.5 million acres of school trust land with an additional 1 million acres of mineral rights. That's a substantial holding, and it's important certainly to the school trust funds and the interest which we derive off it. I think you know, too, that those of you particularly in the Environment and Natural Resources Committee, that our forests, particularly our Minnesota forests owned by the state of Minnesota, managed by the state of Minnesota, become increasingly valuable. And I think increasingly we've done a better job of managing these lands due to forest legacy, consolidation. Last year we did some work with Forests of the Future, exchanges, even outright purchases of land. So, and then, of course, when we talk about the mining school trust lands, there's no question about it that some of the proposals for projects up to northeastern Minnesota, most particularly in the area of non-ferrous mining, involve school trust funds and school trust lands, and again could be increasingly valuable. That coupled with some good work which came out of education policy and eventually came out of the legislature in terms of an education bill that included the fact that by the year 2010, the interest off the school trust lands will be used to enhance the school trust funds rather than just supplement the general fund. So in other words, right now when we get interest off those school trust funds, it goes in and for every dollar that goes into the education fund, one from the general fund comes out. And in 2010, those funds will go on top of the general fund, and in these days when education funding is a real crisis level, and in Minnesota, I think that's going to be very important. So what we'd like to do here, I think, is start out with Eric Nauman from our E-12 fiscal analyst, who could briefly explain the school trust fund, any changes, the changes that I mentioned, and. And then from there on, we're gonna go to the DNR, and we'll start out with the Deputy Commissioner of the DNR, Bob Myers. So, Eric, go ahead.
Mr. Chair and members, this is going to be a little bit of a trip down memory lane. I'd like to call your attention to this document. This is something we used when we were working through the language of the E-12 bill this year. And I think it's helpful to understand what we did back as a legislature back in 1971 when we created the Permanent School Trust Fund subtraction, and then what was done last year. Under current law, dollars generated either from natural resources or land sales off the Permanent School Trust Fund lands are then deposited in the Permanent School Trust Fund, which is invested by the State Board of Investment. And any interest and dividends that accrue off of that fund are distributed to the school districts. And by law, we determine how those dollars are distributed, and it's basically a lagging pupil count from the prior year based on resident ADMs, and ADMs are average daily membership. So we take the 29 million or so and divide it out by the pupils, and then we create a per pupil amount, and we distribute that to each school district based on their ADM count. And that's the dollars that they get. This is where the change happened. Under the old current law, and this will occur in 2009 as well, Once that amount from the permanent school trust fund is determined, we take an identical amount of a subtraction off of the aids that we pay out of the general fund. So basically, a dollar in from the permanent school fund results in a dollar subtracted off of the general fund appropriation that we make. In this past legislative session, and it becomes effective, as the chair mentioned, in 2010, we eliminate that subtraction. So if you look at this chart, you can see that little bubble down at the bottom that says general fund subtraction. You can erase that from the page. By erasing that from the page, we are not taking away the general fund dollars. So now the permanent school trust fund money becomes real new money. They were always getting the money before. They will always continue to get it. What we are doing is changing the amount of how the general fund money is being dealt with. So that which was previously subtracted will not be subtracted. Does that make sense? Okay, so skipping over to the data run that members of the E-12 division are intimately familiar with. Under current law, I'll just work you across. These are our best estimates based on what Chapter 363, that's the supplemental budget bill in which the E-12 portion was contained. These are the dollars that we anticipate that each school district will receive as a result of it. So the first, working across the columns, is the school district ADMs for 09. The second column should say FY 2010. Those are the resident ADMs for fiscal 2010, and then the AMCPUs for 2010. The distribution of the subtraction is the next column, the $29.9 million. That's the amount of the money that is being pulled away in general fund dollars had current law continued. And then you see an amount per ADM for that. So basically, looking at Aiken, they were losing $38.2 per ADM under the old system. What we did in Chapter 363 is eliminate that subtraction. So eliminating a negative creates a positive. So now under new general ed revenue per district, you can see Aiken gets $45,000 that they wouldn't have had before, and that turns into $38.2 per ADM. We do then convert it into an AMCPU number. That's the pupil count that we use for the purposes of the formula. So if you want to compare this to how much money a school district might receive off the formula allowance, it's akin to, for the Aiken district, adding $32 to the formula allowance. So, Mr. Chair, that's how the dollars flow.
Good. Questions for Mr. Nauman?
Sure.
Senator Roman.
Does it always depend on the earnings on the fund? Because in a year like when the markets are doing poorly like they are this year, does it fluctuate a great deal?
The State Board of Investment is a better. Under the Constitution, the dividends and interests derived from the permanent school trust fund is what's distributed to the school districts. There is some fluctuation in it, but they're pretty conservative in how they make those investments.
Senator Bott.
Thank you.
Senator Robing, do you have a...
That was my question,
okay.
Because I know that, you know, there's very little interest earnings right now. There's very little stock earnings, and I was just wondering how that impacted a fund like this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Nauman, the impact of this on the state general fund in FY 10-11 is what?
Mr. Chairman and members, it's about $60 million.
So when the finance commissioner recently told me that it was the tax committee that blew out the budget tails, so that in 10 and 11, we, even with the cuts we made this year, we're actually spending $3 million more than we're going to take in 10 and 11. Would that not be quite accurate that the Education Committee also participated in that?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Bach, there was a leadership agreement that included this provision. I feel like you're putting words in my mouth and asking me to draw a conclusion, but it is accurate to say that the education portion of the finance package included spending amounts for this provision of $60 million. Next paragraph, There were also some subtractions in the K-12 bill, so our overall target was below that $60 million because we made some we controlled some of the growth on the Q-Comp program and took some reductions in some other spending items in the K-12 budget. So it's not going to be a total increase. I think our total increase was on the order of about $50 million for the biennium.
Just wanted to be clear that the Tax Committee wasn't the only committee that spent money.
I'm sure the Chairman of the Tax Committee needs to know that, yes. Any other questions? Okay. Good. Well, thank you, Mr. Nauman. Let's go over to the DNR now, and Commissioner Bob Myers. Take it
Mr.
away.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, members. We do appreciate you being here today and your willingness to discuss these important issues with us. The DNR does uphold its fiduciary responsibility to the trust as one of our top priorities amongst fire protection and other things, but our fiduciary responsibilities and fund integrity are very important in our role as an executive branch agency. One piece of legislation that Mr. Nauman did not bring up that did pass as well last year dealing with the Permanent School Trust Fund is some changes to the Permanent School Trust Fund Advisory Committee. In addition to expanding the chairs that participate in this, which previously were just the chairs of the education committees, we are now also adding the chairs of the K-12 education budget committees and the chairs of the committees over environment, natural resources, policy, and budget. And in addition to that, the committee is also being expanded with one person with an expertise in forestry, one person with an expertise in minerals and mining, one person with an expertise in real estate development, one person with an expertise in renewable energy, and one person with an expertise in finance and land management, and one person with an expertise in natural resource conservation. That section also goes on to require the DNR to consult with the legislature and seek recommendations from the legislature for vacancies, which we are seeking that from leadership today, asking for their input for those positions onto the committee. Once the committee is established or reestablished with these vacancies filled, we will be in the process of working with leadership and chairs to get a meeting schedule of this committee and working with developing a biennial report. The reporting that the DNR has required has been amended to require the commissioner to submit biannually to the Permanent School Trust Fund Advisory Committee and the legislature on the management of the Permanent School Trust Fund and show how the commissioner maximized the long-term economic return of the Permanent School Trust Fund. This needs to be taken into consideration with statute that was reaffirmed this past session in 127A, that it states, the goal of the Permanent School Fund is to secure the maximum long-term economic return from school trust fund lands, consistent with the fiduciary responsibilities imposed by the trust relationship established in the Minnesota Constitution, with sound natural resource conservation and management principles, and with other specific policy provided in state law. It puts the department in a unique position, as you'll see from Director Vardy Vadis' position as we talk about forestry, minerals, and also resource conservation, that some lands that are school trust land, they're not all created equal. Not all land have the same capacity to generate revenue for the trust, and some lands, such as old growth forest, the department manages in sound natural resource and conservation principle to maintain it for its conservation characteristics. Of course, now we're moving forward with looking at carbon credits, carbon sequestration, renewable energy. There's a lot of opportunities on the forefront as well that we'll be examining. Wind leases, for example. How should the DNR, or how should the state charge back to people who want to rent a piece of state trust fund land for a wind turbine? Should it be based upon the kilowatt hour that it generates, or should it be such as some other places based on square footage or things like that? So I think the Trust Fund Advisory Committee has some real solid issues to deal with. Also, we need to consider the legislature has made some determinations of land ownership into the trust as well. Approximately 50,000 acres of peat land were classified as school trust land and then turned over to the state to manage as well, which we have to manage basically at this point in time with sound natural resource conservation principles. Perhaps when we get to a day and age where we can do some carbon credit trading, those will be the types of areas that can provide new revenue generation to the trust. But we are looking at this very seriously. We had a great conversation and dialogue with the legislature last year. The outcomes were one that we're happy to see, help lead the state and the department forward in our management of trust fund land, ultimately generating more revenue for the trust, but also protecting those lands that need to be protected for natural resource conservation values as well. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Marty Vadas, and he's going to walk you through the trust fund land management piece. I want to bring up one other issue, piece of information you do have in your packet, is a 1998 report. This is just the executive summary. The whole report's about 200 pages, but in 1998, the legislative auditor did an extensive review of the Department of Natural Resources, the State Board of Investment, and the legislature's trust fund management practices, a review of our management costs and opportunities and how we do things, how the Permanent School Trust Fund Advisory Committee operates with some recommendations that were passed this session. But you'll see in that report or in the executive summary that the department has done a lot of things to correct some of the things that the auditor found. One such thing that we're happy to report on is the removal of all trust fund status on all parcels within state parks. We accomplished that last session, or last year, I should say, I think, in sessions and years, and everything kind of goes together for me. But we accomplished that last year. These are parcels that weren't generating revenue for the trust. We're also looking at parcels that aren't generating for the trust to reimburse the trust, such as boat accesses, wildlife management areas, SNAs. So these are other areas that the committee will be discussing. Other states deal with things differently. Some states put a surcharge on hunting licenses for people to access those lands. You know, there's all sorts of different tools in the toolbox out there to generate revenue for the trust, and we are happy to be having those discussions with you here today and also moving those forward in the upcoming session. So with that, if there's
Commissioner, back to that advisory council, the experts that you mentioned, are they appointed by the governor?
Mr. Chair, members, no. The actual language says the Commissioner of Education and the Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources, basically in consultation with, seeking recommendations from the legislature, shall appoint these members. And there is a superintendent that the Commissioner of Education does appoint, one from the metro and one from out of state, along with the legislative chairs and then the new expertise that we have. And the DNR will also have a non-voting member on that committee providing expertise as well. So
good. Thank you. Senator Bott?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Meyer, you mentioned the leasing of permanent school trust fund land for potential wind renewable energy sites. I think that's a good idea, and I think there probably are some places in northern Minnesota where the wind regime is such that that might be good economics. The question is, does the state have statutory authority to enter into long-term leases like that? Because I would think if somebody's going to spend millions of dollars putting up wind towers, they'd want to, whoever those investors were, would want to be certain that the lease term was long enough. And the reason that comes to mind is St. Louis County this year requested some language to allow them to enter into 30-year lease on some county tax forfeited land. So I'm wondering if the county needed it on a tax forfeit, does the state need to change something so that we would be able to enter into long-term leases like that for something like wind generation?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bach, members, that is an excellent question, and is one that we worked with Senator Saxog in the legislature on last year, giving us the ability to enter into 30-year leases for those types of purposes. But is 30 years the right time? Those are things that we, as a state agency in the legislature, also need to examine periodically as well. So that is a good thing to keep in mind.
So, Senator Saxog, did my little county lease provision get done? I kind of lost track of it.
Yes.
Must have.
Yes.
Yes.
I think it did.
Good. Maybe it initiated a discussion.
It did.
A lot of
Thank
your
you.
Little things ended up in that DNR bill. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bach, the state added on. Basically, the county legislation came in, the state said, how about us too? So basically, the St. Louis County and the state now can both do it for 30 years.
Great. Just St. Louis County?
The other counties, they didn't want to expand it to the other counties right now because they hadn't checked with all of them to make sure they really wanted that authority.
All right, other questions?
Chairman.
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Meyer, on the forest trust lands, there's been some discussion in the past about how the money's been used and where it's been going. Is there a certain percentage of money that DNR uses for management that doesn't go into the trust fund? And to follow up on Senator Bach's question, if you were to lease land to somebody for windmills, for example, would that leased money then be in the trust fund, go into the school trust fund, or would it be used for management at the DNR?
Mr. Chair, Senator Tomasoni, a lot of your questions will be answered in our presentation. One of the things that the Legislative Auditor's Report did is review all of the costs that we do certify against the Trust for Forest Management Practices and found that that practice is, in fact, justifiable. One of the goals that I have in talking with Senator Saxog is not this hearing, but have another hearing to talk about the costs that we do certify against the Trust for Forest Management, what those actually are, how they come about, and how the Department of Finance views those. So you have a good understanding on those costs. In the 80s, there was no timber market for a lot of our forestry wood. We were having to pay people to basically bulldoze over trees in northern Minnesota. And the forestry receipts are directly tied to the forest and timber industry, as you may well aware being from your district. So there was a period of time where there were no revenues generated or being deposited into the school trust from forestry. But it is an issue we're very serious on, and we're trying to generate as much revenue as we can. In fact, now as we see private landowners kind of pull back on having their timber harvested on their lands because of the cost or the price that they're able to generate, I anticipate, or the department anticipates, seeing more trust fund land timber, more state-owned timber, put it that way, across the board being put up for auction as we try to meet our timber management goals and provide wood for the industry.
And the windmill?
The trust fund receipts would go for those leases would go into the trust fund, yes.
You know, Mr. Chairman, I sort of remember in the 80s that there was money generated by the forestry, but the DNR was using it all for its own purposes and not putting anything into the trust fund. Isn't that part of the issue?
Mr. Chair, Senator Thompson, if you can hold those questions until we get to the particular slides about forest management and cost certification, I think it'll provide a larger context for us to have that discussion.
Okay.
And Senator Tomasoni, we're back to the part of the law that we changed this year. If at that particular time it was every dollar in is another dollar out, you know, that had something to do with how we contributed from the DNR too, I'm sure.
Well, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
Just so that
Senator Bach.
For the tape, and so members don't leave with the wrong impression about Mr. Meyer's comment about bulldozing trees down, let me just make it clear. There was a period in time where there were species of trees that there just wasn't a market for. For instance, there might have been a 40 that was predominantly aspen, and there was a good market for aspen, so the state would sell the 40 of timber to a logger, but the logger had no market for the aspen, for the birch trees, for example. And what would happen then is because the DNR wanted all the new timber coming up to be the same age classification, they would cut the rest of the trees down, and there was no place, no market to sell them to, but they wanted the forest to be the same age coming up. And I think they've actually changed that management process some now, but there is a significant new utilization of some of those alternative species now that didn't exist in the 80s. So I just wanted people to understand the department wasn't running through, there was just blowing trees down. It's just that there was some species there was no market for.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bach, thank you for that. There was part of our management, the big part of our forest management principles in the state rely on the participation of logging in the industry to actually actively manage our forests or working forests to keep that wood in rotation so it is a healthy ecosystem for reducing fire potential, making sure we have habitat, and also providing feedstock for our industries. And as Senator Bach alluded to, there are new markets, and biofuels is another emerging market that we're looking at trying to tap into as well. So thank you.
All right. Commissioner, other questions for Mr. Meyer? Thank you.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. Mr. Vadas, how are you?
I'm well, Mr. Chair.
And Ms. Lewis.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members. I'm Marty Vadas, and I'm the director of the DNR Lands and Minerals Division. I'm very pleased to have this opportunity this afternoon to talk about school trust fund land, and I believe you have copies of this PowerPoint. And really what I'm going to cover is what school trust fund land is and how it came into state ownership, what the current school trust fund land ownership pattern is in Minnesota, talk about what is a trust a little bit, and finally talk about revenue generation And I'll tell Mr. Chair, wide open to answering questions as we go through this. I have Kathy Lewis, Assistant Director here, and also Bob Tomlinson, the Assistant Director of the Division of Forestry, is here as well. So I'll leave it up to you if you'd like to wait till the end or take questions as we go along.
Keep that in mind, committee. If you have a question you think you're going to forget, throw your hand up and let's take care of them as we go. Okay.
This map then does show the current trust fund land ownership in the state of Minnesota. And this land came to the state really through three federal grants. And I'll go through and briefly kind of describe those grants and how they came into state ownership. And all of those, all of the income from those individual grants in 1974 was dedicated by the legislature to go to the permanent school fund. And so I'll explain a little bit about that and how that change took place through time. And today, most people call all of these lands permanent school fund lands. And so I'll describe those three grants. The first one is school and indemnity school lands. In the U.S., followed the long-term practice from England that set up school lands for the purpose of funding schools. And so that tradition from Europe continued in the U.S. And in 1857, sections 16 and 36 of every township was dedicated for the use of schools. And often in 1857, the best farmland was gone, or there were a number of treaties that set up reservations. And so often those lands were already gone by the time Minnesota became a state. And so to deal with that, a second class of lands under this 1857 Act called indemnity lands were to make up for those lands that were already taken. And so between the two, the school trust land and the indemnity school lands, a total of 2.9 million acres of land came from the federal government to Minnesota. And about two-thirds of that land was sold by the turn of the 20th century, and the first sale occurred in 1862. So as you'll see a little later on, most of that land was sold. The next class of lands is called swamplands. And in 1860, the United States Congress did a grant of
Excuse me, Mr. Vies. Yes. And when it was sold, the money, the proceeds from it were just... What?
The proceeds from that class of land at that period of time was deposited into the permanent school trust fund. The if you read back, the average land price was about $1.25 an acre during that time. So that's the amount that went into the school trust fund. The next class of land is swamp lands. And this was another grant from the federal government to Minnesota. And this was to be used, the money from the sales of this land was to be used to construct levees and to drain land. So the idea of this was to convert really the wetlands of mostly northern Minnesota into hopefully productive farmland. So that was the goal of this policy decision that was made at that time. And about 4.7 million acres was granted. 3 million acres essentially was given away by the state. 2.8 million acres went to eight railroads. And grants for improvements such as, and this is what it was called at the time, the Faribault Institute of Deaf, Dumb, and Blind, an insane asylum, state prison, Stevens Seminary in southern Minnesota, and something called the Cannon River Manufacturing Association were beneficiaries of some of the land that came through this grant.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, excuse me.
Go ahead. Mr. Vadas mentioned Stevens Seminary. That is now Glencoe Public Schools. It's in McLeod County, and they gave all the swampland, as I recall. I had to look back a few years ago at that original statute from 1860 or whenever it was, and the state legislature gave all of the swampland in McLeod County to benefit for public education of the students in McLeod County. And it was a public school, but it was called Stevens Seminary, and it's now Glencoe High School. And until recently, maybe they still do, when students graduate from Glencoe High School, it's also from Stevens Seminary. And they still own, Stevens Seminary still owns a few acres of that swampland in McLeod County, and it goes for education. And the land is managed by the county board now, I believe. A little aside.
Interesting, yeah.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Bonner.
Thank you. So just to understand what happened, when we say congressional grants, that means the federal government paid the state of Minnesota for this land in return for, can you say more?
Sure, Mr. Chair.
Somebody's shaking their head, so I understand that I'm not understanding it correctly.
This was a grant in the sense of the ownership was transferred from the U.S. government to the state of Minnesota for no cost. And so these lands were the ownership was transferred. The federal government, except for those lands that were already sold to private individuals, homestead and that sort of thing, that land was conveyed to the state of Minnesota in fee title ownership.
If I might add, because Kathy
Ms. Lewis,
Division of Lands and Minerals, you think of land ownership, all land ownership in Minnesota derives from the federal government, subject to the rights of occupancy for the Indians. So all your land titles have to start with the federal government. So this was a big grant of lands conveying from the federal government.
Thank you.
You might insert here, Mr. Vias, if we'd have been successful in draining all this 2.7 million acres, we'd have lost a lot of wetlands that we still retain.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair. The third and final class of lands that today the income goes to school trust fund are called internal improvement lands. And in 1866, about a half million acres was granted for internal improvements. And this is a long story, but in 1841, there was a law that was passed that allowed other states to get grants for this purpose. And Minnesota said, we want that too. And so eventually Congress in 1866 did grant that, so an additional half million acres came to the state. And about 99% of these lands were sold, and the total revenue was $3 million. And most of the money went to pay off state railroad bonds issued to finance early railroad construction in Minnesota. So the next slide then shows the distribution of school lands from the original grant plus the lands that are owned as of today. It says 2007, but that's as of today. And so originally there was 2.9 million acres of school land, and today there's 957 left, 957,000 of that school grant, and that would include the school and the indemnity school lands. The swamp land was 4.7 million. Today there's about 1.5 million. And the internal improvement was 500,000, and today it's 6,500 acres of that land still is in state ownership. So in total, the original amount was a little over 8 million acres, and today it's about 2.5 million acres that remains in state ownership. And really about 60% of that ownership is in wetlands, and that's mostly from that original swamp grant that came to the state. Now, in addition to this, there's about 1 million acres of severed mineral rights that are still school trust fund. And just so you know, originally when school land was sold, the mineral rights were sold along with it. But in 1889, a law was passed that required the state to retain ownership of the mineral rights in Lake, St. Louis, and Cook counties. And in 1901, that was made for all counties where the mineral rights would be retained by the state if the surface was sold. So that's really the history of that additional 1 million acres of severed mineral rights that are owned. And just a couple of other things on this. Minnesota really is more like western states that still have trust land ownership. All eastern states have virtually sold all of their trust land. They own none of it. For example, Iowa has zero. Wisconsin has 5,000 acres from their original grant, and North Dakota has 900,000 acres from their original grant. And so Minnesota's more like Montana, Washington, some of the western states that still have several million acres of ownership left. And there were a number of other grants that the federal government made. The University of Minnesota got a grant, two different grants of 72 sections of land, and some of that land still is owned by the state and managed. The income goes to the University of Minnesota, and some of those mineral rights are being mined now on the Mesabi Range. 10 sections of land was granted to Minnesota for public buildings, and a portion of the state capital was paid for by proceeds from selling those 10 sections of land that the state originally got for that purpose. So it's been a long history. There's Salt Spring lands, agricultural grants. There have been a number of others. But what we're talking about today is the school trust fund, and it's really from those three grants that were originally made. And the next slide shows where those lands are distributed. And there are 10 counties that have over 90% of that land, mostly in northern, northeastern Minnesota. The remaining 77 counties have less than 10% school trust land. A little, the state as a trustee, talk a little about this trust relationship. A trust is defined as a right of property, real or personal, held by one party for the benefit of another. And really a kind of a key here is that the person who is a trustee is held to equitably deal with the property for the benefit of another person. And we'll talk a little about who's viewed as trust managers on the next slide. But most Western states explicitly acknowledge that a trust exists. In Minnesota, the Constitution used the word trust in the land exchange section, but not in the school section. But most legislation in Minnesota does refer to trust in state statutes and also in court decisions. The state as a trustee. Parties frequently named as a trustee would be the governor, legislature, commissioner of natural resources, and the state board of investment. And on the last one, the state board of investment, that's the organization that once money is deposited into the trust fund, they manage it and generate the income that was referred to earlier that's distributed to schools. And so certain duties have been delegated by the legislature to the Commissioner of Natural Resources and to the State Board of Investment. Legislative oversight. The legislature, I believe about 30 years ago, established a permanent school fund advisory committee. And the purpose is to advise the Department of Natural Resources on the management of permanent school fund lands, which are held in trust for the school districts of the state. And Commissioner Meyer talked a bit about the legislation this past session relating to this. And the advisory committee shall review the policies of the Department of Natural Resources and current statutes on management of lands at least semi-annually and shall recommend necessary changes in statute policy and implementation in order to ensure provident utilization of the permanent school trust fund lands. I know you can read, but I guess this is a key point that there is this oversight committee. And the next slide talks about some of the 2008 legislation to amend that that oversight committee. And I believe at the moment Senator Wieger is the chair of that oversight committee, and actually asked for a tour last summer. And at the end, I think I'll offer that if there's an interest in another tour, we'd be happy to work towards that. But the legislation did specify that these are the direction for DNR, and we're to report to that committee twice a year. And also in that legislation last year, Commissioner Meyer mentioned that there were some additional members that were added, the chairs of some of the legislative committees, the Environment and Natural Resource Budget Committees, for example. were added, and also some citizen members, people with expertise in minerals and real estate and renewable energy, finance and land management, and natural resource conservation were added to that oversight committee. And those members have not yet been selected, but I think the goal is to do that in the near future.
Senator Rowland?
Mr. Chair, that was my question as to whether they had been filled yet. You know, have applications been taken? Are they pending review, or where are they at?
Mr. Chair, members, there's direction in legislation that the legislature shall be given the opportunity to recommend members. And so it's our intention then to request, if there are recommendations for those citizen members, that we receive those, and then we move forward with appointments, and have not done that yet, but we're asking for that recommendation from the legislature.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
Is there any requirement for geographic balance, or is just the expertise in those particular areas?
Mr. Chair, members, there was no requirement for anything other than what's listed there, just looking for people with expertise in those particular areas. Revenue. This is from state statute, and as Commissioner Meyer said, the goal is to secure the maximum long-term economic return from the lands consistent with fiduciary responsibilities imposed by the trust relationship established in the Minnesota Constitution. And it goes on then with sound natural resource conservation and management principles and with other specific policy provided in state law. So that's the direction of the goal of the permanent school fund. And this slide might be a little hard to see with the background, but I have a little more detail on each of these. This shows in an overall fashion the gross and the net revenue from fiscal 2002 to fiscal 2007. And so, if I can kind of interpret for you here, there are three different sources of income that are shown here. That area in the bottom of black, that's from land sales. And so what we're showing here on the left bar in each of the years is the gross revenue, and on the right bar in the fiscal year, that's the net revenue, the amount that was actually deposited into the permanent school fund. And so, as you can see, land sales, there was principally all of the income was deposited. The red on here then shows...
And Mr. Vitas, when we're talking about land sales, generally, who do we sell land to?
Mr. Chair, I have a slide on that
later. Oh, okay, fine. Okay, great. That's fine.
Maybe handle it at that point. The red again on here shows the on the left the net the gross revenue for minerals, and on the right is the net revenue from minerals. And I'll talk a little about that mineral management account and the changes that have occurred with that in the last couple of years. And the yellow on here shows the forestry gross revenue, and then the net revenue is the right bar. And on forestry, that's from timber sales, but also from real estate leasing. So the revenue to the corpus of the permanent school fund comes from these sources. One is from mineral leases less the portion deposited into the mineral management account and appropriated to DNR, and I'll describe that in a little more detail, from land sales, and then from forest campground fees, wild rice leases, and standing timber from land sale parcels, and then the final one is the net revenue from forestry suspense account. So those are the sources of income, the revenue to the corpus of the school trust fund. And again, the revenue, the corpus of the trust fund is managed by the State Board of Investments. So DNR's responsibility is to generate the income to deposit into that fund. Then the State Board of Investments' responsibility is to drive income from that money. So this graph shows for fiscal 2002 to 2008, the gross and net mineral revenue. And you can see for fiscal 03, 04, and 05, they're the same. And I'll describe the change that was made in fiscal 06 that made a difference between the gross and the net. And short version is for 120 years or so of state history, management activities to generate income for the school trust fund were always paid by the state general fund. And there was a proposal in fiscal 05 to have that management cost paid for from proceeds from mineral leases. And that honestly was an administrative proposal, and it was really a budget balancing measure. And it was intended and to last for 2 years. And this current biennium, the administration proposed that go back to being funded through the general fund. And in the end, the legislature continued the mineral management account and made it permanent. And so in a nutshell, that's what happened. I'll give you some details of what the legislature authorized for use from the mineral management account. But that's sort of the history. So if you look back for 120 years, the gross and the net were the same for mineral income. And that's changed now. There's management costs that's paid for from the proceeds. And just to give you kind of a sense, in 1992 to 1997, the income from minerals was between $1 to $2 million per year. And so today that's approaching $20 million. And as I'm going to explain a little bit, that's very likely to go up in the future. So the next slide then deals with this mineral management account.
Yes. Got a little question.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Bates, has there ever been a constitutional challenge on the authority of the state to take revenue that's generated on permanent school fund lands, to take their costs off before the money's deposited in the permanent school fund? I still think there's a question about whether the state really has the authority to take revenue that in the Constitution says should go to the permanent school fund. And we put it in this little suspense account so that we can steal some before we deposit it in the permanent school fund, really is what happens. Has it ever been challenged?
Mr. Vadas, Ms. Lewis, whichever.
Mr. Chair, I think I'd like Ms. Lewis to help me with that one.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senator Bach, back in history, back in about the 40s, there was the creation and statute of Chapter 16, a provision to take proceeds from the minerals money and do a minerals suspense account just like forestry. And that question was raised whether that was constitutional to the Attorney General's office. The Attorney General's office issued a formal opinion to the state agency saying that that was unconstitutional as to minerals. It is constitutional as to forestry because forestry has different language in the Constitution because forestry is a separate section that talks about net proceeds and includes a reference to school lands. So from the 40s up to the 1990s, there was no change in that provision and understanding. And then the legislature once again raised the issue due to some budget balancing issues and asked the Attorney General's office the same question. And the Attorney General's office gave the opposite answer this time around and said it is constitutional to have the permanent school fund bear some of the management costs, reasonable management cost, for the minerals activity. And so the legislature passed a provision to take some of the revenue for management. And then that was repealed in a subsequent year, and then we came to the fiscal year 05, where we got into the next cycle where the provision was. So the constitutional issues have been raised in the past.
And, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Lewis, the courts have never decided.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bach, it has not been brought to the courts.
Mr. Chair, go ahead.
Senator Bonner.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Lewis, could you tell us how much money we're talking about so we have an idea of the scope?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Senator, the current balance in the corpus is something over $700 million.
Mr. Chair, I'm talking about the fees?
Ah, that's the next few slides.
And the amount of money that we're talking about? Thank you.
Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And we on the Higher Ed Committee at one time dealt with this for the University of Minnesota a little bit, but realizing that if there isn't an investment, an increasing investment in management, you get a smaller return too. So you know, if you can't take money from the general fund to increase the investment to manage the lands, then the fund isn't going to grow either. So it's kind of a catch-22, whether or not you have the management fees coming out of the fund or not, because there is no guarantee that the general fund is going to pay for increased management fees to get increased benefit for the fund. So I understand, you know, I can kind of see why we don't necessarily pursue it, because it could end up that the fund will generate less money if the general fund won't cover the management fees.
You want to respond to that, Senator Bach?
Mr. Chair, Senator Roebling, I think I heard somebody say for 120 years, no money was taken out of the permanent school fund proceeds to fund the Division of Minerals. And I think I read in the legislative auditor's report that 84% of all the revenue in the permanent school fund is from mining. And for 120 years, the legislature never took any money out of those proceeds. It all went to the corpus of the fund. And in 2005, when I carried Senator Sam's finance bill, the governor had proposed, and because of the budget situation, we agreed for a two-year window to take $3 million a year out of the proceeds for mining and to help fund the Division of Minerals, actually to predominantly fund the Division of Minerals. And we did that for 2 years, knowing that that really probably wasn't a good idea to take that money out of the permanent school fund, but we were forced into that by the budget situation. And I believe this year's finance bill, and Mr. Knopper Mueller can correct me if I'm wrong, did they make that $3 million a year permanent?
Mr. Mueller?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bach, we actually did that the funding year in 2007. And, yes, it was, like Mr. Vadas described, it was not a governor's position, but, and the Senate did not have it in its bill either. And the House provision that prevailed in conference committee. So, yes, it is now a permanent funding mechanism of the Division of Minerals.
Other questions? Okay.
Mr. Chair, maybe a little history. And there was a state land office that managed this land until 1939 when it came into the Department of Conservation. The responsibility was assigned in 1969. The Department of Natural Resources was created, so DNR now manages this land. And the mineral management account, there's several pieces of that I'd like to explain, and it's a little complicated, but I have a few slides here to try to do that. And the first is the law provides that 20% of income generated from, it says mining, but really from mineral receipts is dedicated to a DNR mineral management account. And that's from all classes of land. So we're not talking about just school trust fund land. It's university trust. It's tax forfeit. It's CONCON. It's LUP. Whatever the class of land that generates income, 20% of that goes to this mineral management account. And the next point, then, is that the legislature appropriates money from the mineral management account to the DNR for mineral management activities. So keep that in mind. 20% goes into that mineral management account, but the legislature does a couple of things. And one is they decide what the appropriation will be from that account for the mineral management activities. Next slide. Another feature of this mineral management account is when it was established, there was also a provision to allow a $3 million principal to accrue in that account. And the idea was that in the event that there is a downturn in mineral generation from minerals, it was a contingency account to allow a reasonable minerals program to go forward with the idea of trying to generate future income. So that account was quickly funded because mineral receipts are really quite high right now. So the if there's more than $3 million in that, if there's $3 million in that account, no more goes into it. So then the only amount that can be spent out of the mineral management account is that amount the legislature appropriates for DNR to do the management activities. The next slide then talks about that. At the end of fiscal 07, an additional $1.7 million went to the permanent school fund because the $3 million in that contingency account was already met. So I have another slide that shows the 80% that went in, but in addition to that, an additional 1.7 went into it. And for fiscal 08, it was additional $2 million that went into the fund. And so the short version is, in fiscal 06, 20% of mineral income from all sources went to the mineral management account. And that $3 million was met during that period of time. And so no more will go into that a contingency account. And so for fiscal 07, it was 9.3%, and fiscal 08, 9.4%. And what that represents is that legislative appropriation for the management of minerals by DNR.
Mr. Chairman?
It's a question.
Senator Thomas Orange.
Mr. Chairman, at some point, I don't know, maybe you've got a slide on this already, but at some point, I think what we need to figure out here is how much that $3 million is going to eventually cost our school kids, because as a result of the change in legislation, the permanent school fund money is now on top of general fund money going to schools. And by subtracting the $3 million, that $3 million doesn't generate any interest in the permanent school fund. So over a period of years, that particular number could get pretty big. And so at some point in time, we should make a decision as to whether or not we want to continue with this policy, I would think.
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Vase,
keep in mind a couple of things. Not all the $3 million came from school trust fund. School trust fund during this period of time represented, if my memory is right, about 60% of the mineral income. So that proportionate amount really was from the school trust fund. And also the account does generate interest. And so any interest that that results in that fund being over $3 million goes to the university trust fund and the school trust fund. And that's a unique feature in this law, is if money is generated off of, say, tax forfeit land, they don't get any of the excess. Only the university trust fund and the school trust fund, by statute, receive any amount over the $3 million that's available. And so tax forfeit land or con land is not treated in the same fashion. So just a portion of that $3 million really came from school trust fund income.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Senator Thomas.
We're still not realizing the maximum amount in the school trust fund as a result of this policy. And so the amount that could be going back to school kids is less than what it could be,
Mr. Chairman,
if we were to use general fund money instead of using permanent school fund money, or just make the DNR use the whatever money we give them to do this.
Senator Salzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Vadas, just to clarify, so 20% is taken off of the income, and it doesn't matter where it comes from, it's about 20%. How do we know the 20%? Is that based on real costs? Because if I'm following you correctly, and I'm a visual learner, so if this was all on one page, I could probably understand it a little bit better. If the actual costs are less than that, the money is returned once the $3 million is achieved. So what really determines the 20%, and is there a mechanism in here to review actual costs of managing this land? And as income goes up, is there any cost efficiencies? So it doesn't maybe need to be 20%. There's some fixed costs that are figured in. That's a number of questions, I understand.
Mr. Chair, maybe if I gave an example. In fiscal 08, for example, there was about $30 million of mineral income. So 20% of that, and that's from all sources, mm-hmm. not just school trust fund. So 20% of that would go into the mineral management account, which would be about $6 million. And the amount that the legislature approved for mineral management in fiscal 08 was $3 million. And so DNR did spend $3 million in fiscal 08 for mineral management, but that additional $3 million of income went to the funds, the university and the school trust fund. And that was on a proportional basis. And so as income goes up, the 20% will continue to come into the mineral management account, but the only amount that will be spent by DNR is what the legislature appropriates for the management. And there is oversight in finance committees on what goes into that mineral management funding for DNR to manage the minerals. So I hope that helped.
Yes, thank you very much.
Go ahead, Senator Bott.
Mr. Chair, Senator Saltzman, I think the way to think about it is of the minerals money that of the money that came in or should have gone to the permanent school fund in FY07 that came from minerals, 9.3% of that money was taken for administration. The legislature appropriated it, so we took 9% of the money. And back to my constitutional question, Mr. Nauman was very helpful in providing me a copy. Let me just read you exactly what the Constitution says relative to the revenue that's generated. That's why I raised the question. It says, all funds arising from the sale or disposition of lands or income accruing in any way before the disposition thereof shall be credited to the permanent school fund. It says all funds. It doesn't say net. It says all funds. And I just think the legislature made a mistake in 05. I played a part in that to help balance the budget. But in 07, when we made that permanent, I think there's a serious question whether that's constitutional. And somebody should, if the legislature, you know, we all swore we're going to uphold the Constitution. Maybe we ought to get an interpretation of what it is. But I think we made a mistake in 07. And the fact that we made it permanent and we're going to take 9% of all the mining royalties permanently and it's not going to go into the fund is pretty troubling to me. Because if they had made that decision 100 years ago, you know, the permanent school fund would be 10% or more less today.
Other questions? Okay. Thank you. Mr. Vias.
The next slide is one I wanted to kind of give you some sense, and I have a handout that goes along with this. If perhaps we could distribute that to the committee. The question came up last session about potential income to the permanent school fund from proposed or potentially proposed non-ferrous mineral projects. And so we did some work on trying to estimate what that might be. And so this map then in the handout also has a map that shows that area of northeastern Minnesota that contain copper, nickel, platinum deposits. And I can explain the companies that are doing each of these projects, but there are four of them that are exploring deposits that they've drilled out in that area. One of them has come forward and is in the middle of environmental review, and the others are not. They need more geologic information before they're prepared to do that. But also on this map, then, there are some green squares on here, and those green squares represent school trust fund mineral rights. And so we then did an estimate based on current mineral prices. And the short version is over a 30-year period of time with the amount of ore that's been identified, should those deposits be mined, it would represent about $1.4 billion of income to the school trust fund. And so I don't know if there are any questions on that. And, you know, a lot of things would have to happen to realize that. None of those deposits have been through environmental review. None of them have the permits that would be required in order to be developed. So they're except for the Polymet deposit, they're all in the exploration stage, and additional work is needed. But I guess the point is we had no idea what the potential income might be to the school trust fund from this activity, And so now we have an estimate of what that would be for what it's worth.
And, Mr. Vias, that's based on the potential number of acres and mining done by the four projects, and then the current market value of those minerals, or?
Mr. Chair, it was as of last November, I believe. It's in that document. And actually, metal prices are a bit higher today than they were at the time that that was done. So it was sort of a snapshot in time based on the conditions that existed when we put that together. If markets go down, then that number will go down. If markets go up, potentially that number would go up. And you know, is 30 years the right period of time to look at that? I mean, others could look at it differently and come up with a different way to look at it, but that's what we did.
And, those are conservative numbers, I'm assuming.
Mr. Chair, some might look at it that way. The question came up, the next slide then is trust fund from land sales. And DNR does generally hold two land sales per year. We sell a variety of kinds of land, and one class that we do periodically sell is trust fund land. This is not the preferred way to manage the land is to sell it, but there are instances where the land really can't generate income. Where, for example, it's landlocked, so you, unless you gain access to that, you can't access it for timber harvest or aggregate mining or that sort of thing. Also, there might be little slivers of land. There may be trespasses, as an example. And in a couple of instances, as mentioned in the footnotes, there have been some legislatively approved lake lot sales that have taken place through time. I believe in 2002 and then again in 2005. And, for example, one lake lot in Scott County that was, I think, just over an acre generated $500,000. So it was a very competitive sale. So anyway, just for your information, that's the recent history of income that from land sales. And that income does go into the permanent school trust fund. The next topic then is forestry management, and again I have Bob Tomlinson here that can help me with the questions. I'm more familiar with the mineral management account, less so with the forestry suspense account, but I have a number of slides here that describe this. Revenue from timber sales along with fees from real estate leases, licenses, and easements are deposited into the forestry suspense account. So this is sort of the procedure that's set up. The costs for managing trust lands are certified by the Department of Finance. And that is according to Minnesota statute that's the procedure. Allowable costs are for protection, improvement, administration, management of forest lands, and construction and maintenance of forest roads. So those are the allowable costs that can be certified. And the next slide then, the general fund is reimbursed for protection and administrative costs. And I think I can interpret that the protection is one thing is firefighting costs. And so a portion of what the state spends on firefighting is charged to the school trust fund and not paid from the general fund. The forest management investment account is reimbursed for improvements, management, and forest roads. And fiscal 07 and 08 revenues were down due to timber industry downturn and costs were up due to the fire management. It was as you may recall, the Cavity Lake fire, it was a very busy fire year last year. And so the next slide shows examples of allowable costs for certification. And there's the major classifications, protection, administration, management, forest roads, and improvement. And under each of those, then, there's examples of the kinds of costs that forestry certifies for those purposes.
Mr. Vias, I think Senator Clark has a question.
Yeah. Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it would be helpful, certainly for me at least, if you could talk a little bit more about the certification process since the DNR supplies the data, but finance certifies it? What are the safeguards? I mean, the DNR obviously handles a variety of types of funds and lands. What are the safeguards that are in place that we've actually that this fund gets billed appropriately?
Mr. Chair, if it's all right, I'd like to invite Assistant Director Tomlinson to answer that question, because I don't know the answer.
Okay, good.
Mr. Chair, I had a feeling that might be the case. Thank you.
Mr. Tomlinson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Bob Tomlinson, Assistant Director for the DNR Division of Forestry. Mr. Chair, Senator Clark, members, first I think the first thing to understand is that when we talk about forest land in the state, the DNR Division of Forestry has responsibility with three primary land types. Trust fund land, which is about 50% of all the forest land that we manage. Then there's CONCON lands, consolidated conservation lands. I think CONCON is what we call it for short. And then acquired lands, lands that we've bought with general fund monies over the years. R.J. Doerr Memorial Hardwood Forest, for example, in southeastern Minnesota is largely acquired land, very little trust fund lands down there, although there is some of that. We keep track of the costs that we incur broadly across all those lands. We don't, in other words, when we're out doing inventory work or we're setting up timber sales and those sorts of things, the costs are attributed overall. It's actually about 5.5 million acres total. On the revenue side, however, we keep very close track of where the revenues are coming off of, because the revenues, obviously, it's very important for us to know that X number of the about $25 million in revenue off of lands in fiscal year 08, about 50% of that will be attributed to trust fund lands, and that, of course, goes into the suspense account. On the other hand, with the CONCON lands, half of that money, the revenues come back to the Forest Management Investment Account for future investments back into the land. The other half goes back to the counties. And with acquired lands, all the money comes back into us for management purposes. But with the trust fund land, we keep very close accounting, basically, of our costs. Our activities, every pay period, our foresters out in the field, everywhere, code their timesheets relative to what they're spending their time on. So when their 80 hours is broken down, it might be broken down 10 different ways. Some of it might be attributed to timber sales and some of the other things. And then we're able to, from that, at the end of the year, total all of that up and proportion that out. So to kind of get to your question, the cost, for example, for fire, that we know that in fiscal year 07, the total costs were about, I think, $27 million in fire, because it was a big fire year for us with a couple of major fires up in the northern part of the state. And we know that trust fund lands are proportionate to about 10% of the total forest land that we provide fire protection on. So that thus 10% of that total cost of $27 million is sent back to the general fund out of the suspense account of the revenues that were arrived off of that. With the other activities, the management, the improvement, the administration, and forest roads, that's based more on a proportionate basis of what of trust fund lands to total state-owned forest lands, which is the 5.5 million, so it's about 50% there. Does that help answer your question?
It does.
Yeah, Mr. Senator Clark. It does. A follow-up question for that. It sounds then like it is assigned a proportional share within whichever pot you're looking at. What if, is that regardless? So, for example, if the fires have been entirely exclusively outside of the area of the trust fund's land, would it still have been assigned the 10%? Is that appropriate Senator Bach's question earlier?
Mr. Chair, Senator Clark, it would. We don't ask our foresters to keep track if they're putting out a fire on trust fund land or CONCON land or acquired land. We do that with the revenue producing things on the revenue side, as I mentioned, so that we know exactly where the revenues are coming from.
Well, Mr.
Senator Thomas Sorn. Senator Clark? Senator Thomas
Sorn. Just one little follow-up to that then. So what is the percentage of the money that goes into the school trust fund that's generated off that's coming next Okay. All right.
Yeah, that's the next slide.
All right. Okay.
Next slide. All right. Any other questions?
Senator Tomassoni, this similar graph to the one I showed on minerals, this shows the gross and the net forestry revenue for 2002 to 2007. And so, for example, 2007, the gross income was about $10 million, and the net was something over $2 million that was deposited into the corpus of the trust fund.
It does seem pretty.
So we're spending, what, 80% on management fees?
Go ahead.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Tomassoni, in 2007, we spent about, for every $10, the one way to look at it, I guess, is that for every $10 that we took in, it cost us $8 to bring that $10 in.
I think that's 80%, isn't it?
80%.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, again, I want to remind you that in 2007, timber revenues were way down and fire costs were way up. When you average the last 2002 through 2007, 5-year period there, it's about 60% is what it comes to.
What you're seeing there, Senator Tomassoni, correct me if I'm wrong, is kind of like a margin in a retail situation. You know, there's managing a forest are obviously a little more expensive than even managing just leases for mining. So.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, maybe there's too many categories. Maybe we need to.
Well, but that, to but Senator Tomassoni, it's why we're having 80, a hearing.
80% seems like a big number to me.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Roland.
But if you were in business and got a 20% return, you'd be thinking you'd be making a lot of money in a private business. So, I mean, I guess putting in that perspective, that return would be very good. Of course, we're always looking for greater efficiencies, and since we already own the land, that's a big factor. I was wondering, do we make payment in lieu of taxes on any of this property?
Can anybody answer that?
Mr. Chair, the answer is yes. The number doesn't stick in my mind. I believe it was 50 cents an acre. Perhaps Senator Bach can recall whether that has increased recently or not. But in the past, it's been 50 cents an acre.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Bach. In the interest of full disclosure, it probably was that in the past. Counties have an option, often better explain this to me, of taking 0.75% of the market value of a parcel or an amount per acre, which last I looked was $4 or what, Mr. Knopf?
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Bach, yeah. That's for acquired lands. Right. For school trust lands, yeah. It was originally started at 37.5 cents an acre. Then when your predecessor put the inflation factor in, it varies from year to year. I think it's about 50 cents an acre right now. For school trust lands is what the in lieu of tax payments are. Because they don't have the option of going with the 0.75%. That's only for acquired lands or if you're certain con lands in wildlife management areas and things like that.
Mr. Chair, I've been informed the current payment is 60.1 cents an acre.
Mr. Chairman.
Good. Mr.
Hand. Thank you. Thank you,
welcome.
Mr. Chairman. Appreciate it. Thank you. Yeah. And thank you for your testimony. And we've had testimony in our education committee prior to this, and I want to try to clarify something that was raised at that time. My understanding is that there is no single department or individual that has responsibility for the entire trust lands, that it is depending on the category of land that may fall into forestry or minerals. And the concern I have or the question I have is why wouldn't we want to have some office or some individual whose primary responsibility is to focus on the development of these lands with the view of generating revenue for the trust? Why wouldn't we do that?
Mr. Vadas, you want to take a shot at that?
Absolutely, Mr. Chair. And that did come up last session, and what DNR said at the time is the one person that's responsible is the Commissioner of Natural Resources, because legislature has delegated the commissioner that authority, And then the commissioner delegates that authority to certain people like division directors. So I have a responsibility for minerals and for land management to generate income for the school trust fund, and I'm reportable to the commissioner and accountable for that, for doing that. And so it's not organized in a fashion that you're describing, but that's how it has been approached. Whether that's the right way or the wrong way, I don't have an answer on that, but that is how we have approached it. And if you look at mineral management, for example, it's a hodgepodge, a patchwork of ownerships, of state ownerships in any particular, say, taconite mine. And so to me, it would make no sense to have someone only concentrate on one class of land and negotiating leases within that area. I think having someone that represents all the state ownerships and all the state interests and dealing with them equitably between funds makes more sense in that thing that I probably know the most about, and that's mineral management.
Senator Ann.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. And I guess maybe that needs to be clarified more. That's one of the questions I have what is the basis by which the legislature should be evaluating this activity? This is what I struggle with. We're hearing a little debate over here about, well, it costs 80% to manage the forestry lands. Is that good or bad? I don't know. How do we evaluate this? I've heard rumors, or maybe not rumors, but stories that the trust fund lands for the university are actually smaller in number but generate nearly the same amount of income as the state trust lands for the schools. And so part of my question about the responsibility of this is as a legislative committee, how do we evaluate how well this is being done or how well it ought to be done? And can you shed any light on that, Senator?
Mr. Chair, I'll try.
But Mr. Vadas, if we're going to try to end this at 3:00, so this won't be the last hearing on this. And if that's one of the questions, and it's a good question that Senator Hand develops, those are some of the questions we may want you to, if you would, to prepare for the if we have another session, and that's what we're looking for. Is that?
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, good. Senator Salzman.
Yes, and on that same point, Mr. Chair, and on to Senator Han and Mr. Vadas, is that I think that was for those of us who went on the tour and saw all these different lands. It was incredibly educational to look at, you know, what kind of expertise is needed, and that's why I support the involvement of other people on this advisory board. And so maybe to ask Mr. Vadas to come back with that, that's some of the information that can come from this advisory board, people who are in the field. But it's really fascinating. But to have one person be able to look at this, but I think to have a coordinated effort, and that's why I believe this advisory board will be very helpful, to have people looking at certain lands and how could they be used most effectively. So that was just my sort of, I guess, response of perhaps that's where the advisory board can be very helpful and to encourage you to work with them for recommendations. So.
Thank you, Senator. Other comments?
I have a handful of slides left, Mr.
Yeah,
Chairman.
Yeah, I know.
If you'd like, we could.
Oh, yeah, Senator Buck. Excuse me, Mr. Fee.
Quickly, the DNR manages the permanent university fund lands also. How do we take charges against management costs on that? And how much of the minerals management account is generated from permanent university fund lands?
Mr. Please. Chairman, Senator Bach, might have mentioned earlier, the 20% mineral managed that goes to the mineral management account is regardless of the ownership type. So the university trust fund does pay a portion of that mineral management cost. And it's proportional to the amount of income. And so last fiscal year, for example, trust fund the school trust fund was the majority of income, so they paid the majority of the cost, but it was prorated depending on what the income was. So it was about 60% school trust fund, something close to 40% was university trust fund.
Well, I raise that, Mr. Chairman, because members of the DFL caucus may remember that in 2007, when we caucused the environment finance bill, I was very upset that the minerals management account, permanent. I mentioned Judge Gerald Haney because I knew I would hear from Judge Haney about that, because he's a strong advocate of the University of Minnesota, one of the stronger advocates I know, I believe. And I did hear from Judge Haney, and he said, do you realize that if you take $200,000 out of that fund a year, he said, the proceeds on that, we give away $1,000 scholarships. He said, you are reducing maybe 15 scholarships every single year permanently. He said, eventually you're talking about eliminating hundreds and hundreds of scholarships from students that want to attend the University of Minnesota, because you don't have the revenue, you don't have the proceeds to do that, and he's still very upset about it. I do hope that the legislature at some point addresses that, because I hate to beat a dead horse, but I think there's a reason that the governor proposed it in the old 05 session, and then even the governor proposed to get rid of it in 07, because I think they realized it bordering the edge of being unconstitutional. And unfortunately, the legislature decided to do it.
Okay. Anything else? Mr. Vadas,
Next few
please.
Slides, then. Trust management costs versus trust revenue, and again, this is related to the forest management, and I think the point of this slide is that for forestry purposes, if you think about rotation time and that sort of thing, a small percentage of the trust acreage really generates revenue in any one particular year. And I think this slide is intended to try to illustrate that. Of the 2.424 million acres of trust fund land that's managed by forestry for forestry purposes, only about 1.5 million acres is really capable of producing commercial quantities of timber. In any one year, about 29,000 acres are harvested of school trust land, and that represents about 2% of the total acreage that could potentially be harvested. And I'm sorry. I got it wrong. 18,000 acres are harvested each year, which is something around 1%. And 29,000 acres are reserved from harvest. And that, I think, is interpreted to mean that's old growth. That's trees, stands that are set aside for, that's a whole different topic, for their old growth qualities.
Right.
And so I think that's the point of this slide.
And Mr. Vadas, the other thing is, if you've got 2.24 million acres of trust land, we know that there's, what, close to 300,000 acres in the Boundary Waters Canoe Area, too.
Mr. Chair, I think that's an example of some of the differences between this 2.24 million and the 2.5 million of state ownership. And if my memory is right, Mr. Chair, it's something like 100,000 acres of school trust fund is in the Boundary Waters.
Okay, it's
and
not
really can't generate any revenue because
right.
of the, well, it just can't
it's
generate
obvious,
revenue.
Right. It's wilderness.
Directly. and this slide then is a shot of, I believe this is Itasca State Park, and just to illustrate, I think. Commissioner Meyer mentioned that last fiscal year we were successful in exchanging all the land out of state parks, all the school trust fund land that couldn't generate revenue for acquired land. And so we've now taken care of that issue in state parks. There is some land remaining in state parks, but it's in places like the Cayuna Recreation Area, and that that's established that enables generation of revenue. Also, at the Hill Annex Mine State Park, there's some school trust land left. But, for example, DNR leased 440s within Hill Annex State Park to Minnesota Steel for their taconite project. And so those can generate income, and so they weren't exchanged out because there was no reason to do that. Just to let you know, there is legislative direction that DNR is to look at other trust lands that are in management units that can't generate income, and we're doing that. We're looking at this old growth issue that was in the previous slide, looking at water access sites that are on school trust land and wildlife management areas and scientific and natural areas. We're inventorying where they are how many there are, what the acreage is, and setting up priorities for doing either exchange or condemnation or leases to compensate the trust for that use. And so that's something that's active right now and we're working on at the moment. And just to give you an idea, there are 119 water access sites out of about, my memory is about 1,800 water access sites that are on school trust land, and that represents about 75 acres of land. So we're coming up with a way to either combine all that land into one exchange to compensate the trust fund. Perhaps leases on some of them might be an option, or condemnation. But moving forward, trying to deal with the fact that some of that land is being used for these purposes, or it can't generate revenue, as is the case with scientific and natural areas.
And you said the major success over the last couple of years has been trying to get and school trust lands out of the state parks.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. As of today, there is no land in any state park in the state of Minnesota that school trust owned that can't generate revenue.
Okay, good. Yes, Senator Bach.
Thank you for taking care of that. I know that's been a thorny issue for the department. But has there been any effort? I think the numbers I looked at, about 10% of the campsites in the Boundary Waters are on school trust fund land. Those of you that travel there, if you look at the fire grates, some of the fire grates say Department of Natural Resources on them instead of U.S. Forest Service. Has there been any effort to charge a lease fee to the U.S. Forest Service or, you know, on behalf of the Permanent School Fund? You know, and I know they're going to come back and say, oh, we have all these management costs, but the truth is, I don't know how much management awareness needs. It just seems like 10% of the campsites are on the state school trust fund line. Maybe, you know, they're charging reservation fees and overnight camping fees, and 10% of the campsites are
ours, and we receive no revenue for it.
Has there been any effort in that effort to on leases, to lease those campsites for the federal government?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bach, a little information on that. some places, like, for example, if you're familiar with the Lake One entry point to the Boundary Waters, that is school trust fund land. It's not federally owned land. And for many years, there was a lease on that where the federal government did pay a lease fee for the use of that access point. And the feds quit paying that lease fee, I'm going to guess, 10 or 15 years ago. And the reason was that the state was giving an appropriation to the feds for managing those campground sites in the Boundary Waters. And so when the state quit paying to manage the sites in the Boundary Waters, the feds quit paying a lease fee on things like the Lake One access. And that's sort of the situation and how it stands at the moment.
Senator Bach.
What's changed is the overnight camping fee that they've instituted, and they now are actually charging people. I mean, and it's not a small amount of money anymore. It keeps going up. I think the last time I was there, it was, I don't know, $12 or something. They charge per night now. It keeps going up. I mean, if they're going to continue, and that those, my guess is those fees are going nowhere but up, but a portion of those should belong to the state.
State charges $16 a night at state.
Senator
Mr. Chair, follow-up question to Senator Bach's question. When it comes to the firefighting, do we charge back the U.S. Department for the portion that they own of our firefighting costs?
Mr. Thompson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonner, yes, we do.
Good.
Well, I think these last points have been interesting, too. It's the work on consolidation and exchanges and outright purchases that make this, you know, working on chipping away at this 2.2 million acres and making it more efficient and more income-producing for schools or for the school trust fund are important. So that's something to be thinking about, too. Any other input from... Ms. Lewis, do you have anything in particular that you want to relay to us, or
Mr. Chairman?
Okay, thank you.
No, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Thompson.
I know we've been talking about this extensively all along here, but you know, Senator Bach's been pointing out the $3 million that's coming out of the minerals account for management. The forestry account is taking $8 million out of their account for management. That's $11 million that's coming out of the permanent school fund for management. And I think that's a big number when you start talking about going over 10 or 15 or 20 or 100 years. And I somewhere along the way here, I think we got to get a handle on this and figure out a way to reduce the management fees that are coming out of the permanent school fund, because it's basically coming right out of our schools is what's happening. And we all know what funding for our schools is like. So this was a good hearing to be able to air what is actually going on and how much money is being utilized for things other than the permanent school fund. So,
and Senator Tomasoni, is because of the Education Committee and, mm-hmm. and the changes they made for 2010 that you can make that statement. Otherwise, it didn't really make a lot of difference.
It still was money in the permanent
school
fund.
Oh, it was, but I mean, it didn't have the effect that it could.
Well, it had an effect on the general fund.
Yeah. Senator Wieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and you know, just a brief perspective. I became a member of that committee last year when I became chair of education, and I didn't really know too much other than I knew it existed and it was in the Constitution. And I was struck by the fact here's 2.5 million acres or so and over $600 million in a corpus. It's a lot of money, and it does not even go for the schools. It's just a disingenuous pass-through. And so the first priority was let's get the committee up there and visit Senator Tomasoni. You were very gracious, and Representative Rukavina and Senator Saxhog, others, when we were up there, and we said we want to get rid of this subtraction and at least keep the money with the schools where it was constitutionally intended. And then we said we need more expertise on the advisory committee, and then Senator Lynch carried that provision in the legislation. Representative Dietrich in the House, I carried the subtraction. But that also is a part of law now, and we're waiting, as you said, on the appointments, because that will be a very important part now where we get further into the management and questions on best practices and whether we're getting the most yield for a dollar. And we'll also raise questions as to the integrity of the management fee as it relates to the dollar in the program versus going at the net amount staying in that account. We wanted to get other people involved in that process, and that has been enacted in law. And I'm very interested, Senator Bach, and perhaps an attorney general opinion as well on actions that there might be a question on constitutionality. And that's something we can further discuss. But at the next meeting for this advisory group for the Permanent School Fund, we will have then the new members as well as additional committee members that are from the budget committees, from the Environmental Committee, Finance Committee, and in both bodies. And through getting this background, it's going to give us much more ammunition to further review it. And this has been very helpful for the review, and we're getting ready for our next meeting, which I anticipate will be in the fall. Mr. Commissioner Myers is working on that once we get the new members on board, and then we'll pursue it. So I wanted to share those thoughts, and also I wanted to thank the Minnesota School Boards Association for all their work last session, because they really made this a high priority at their delegate assembly and recognized the potential. And again, I hope if you weren't in the room when they had this handout on the sheet for the Duluth complex area, $1.4 billion potential, and there's just a great deal of other potential, and we'll be asking to look at best practices in other states as well. It was mentioned that in the East Coast, a lot of these trust lands have been sold. There's not much left, but there's a great deal of activity in the West, and I understand there's different groups, trade groups, or where you can share information as to what's working best, and we'll be looking more into that.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Senator Saxhog. I'm just wondering, when you said we retained the mineral rights after we sold the land, but that doesn't mean we can ever force anyone who owns the land to go after the minerals underneath. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Vitas.
Actually, there was a provision in state law that gave, believe it or not, mining companies eminent domain. That was repealed some time ago. And it's a situation where, say, our state mineral lease, if the surface is not owned by the state, the lease requires that the mineral leaseholder sort of make a deal with whoever owns the surface and compensate them. And so that's the way it happens. The mineral owner does have a right to have access to their minerals and explore them and potentially exploit them, but not at the expense of the surface owner. So there is a need to deal with the surface owner equitably and compensate them for any damages that might occur.
Thank you.
Other questions? Senator.
If I could, Mr.
Yeah,
Chair,
yes.
Just to let you know that a letter was delivered to the House and Senate leadership today requesting legislative recommendations for these committee members to be appointed to that oversight committee. And the request is to have those names to the Commissioner of DNR by August 15th. And so that letter was sent with that request for nominations for that group.
Thank you, Mr. Senator Salzman, do you have another comment?
I do, Mr. Chair. Just a brief comment that when we did go on the tour, one of the things that we learned is that in other states, how they handle school trust fund revenue is that in many states, school districts apply for this money as a grant. And as we considered the legislation, that was one thing that I wanted to not forget is that as we take away the subtraction, that in the future then we see less of an obligation to fund our schools. And so to, you know, continue to monitor the dollars that these lands really provide to our schools. This was something that was, you know, really started when our state was founded 150 years ago or 152 years ago. And so I think that that was one thing that we looked at and thought about is how might we track these dollars so that, again, it doesn't allow us the opportunity to invest less in our schools so that as these dollars go up, they can really be there to fund the future of Minnesota students.
It's my thought that this committee could meet maybe one more time, maybe sometime in October to talk over some of the points that were left unanswered and just talk about maybe some different things. And we'll be in touch. And if you have any input that you can think of that would be helpful to us, please let myself or my LA Mitch Bergeron know. I think it's important to realize, though, that for those of us that live up in the forest lands of northern Minnesota, northeastern Minnesota, that we all know that the management of our forests here is what ultimately will produce any additional income that we have. And so healthy, sustainable, multi-use forests, good management techniques, whether they be through consolidation, forest legacy, whatever they might be, are all things that are coming along right now along with talk of, you know, money that we need for schools that are produced. So keep that in mind, too, because that's really what it gets down to, I think. Other comments? If not, thank you for your participation, and the meeting is adjourned.